Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Vampire Historian Podcast. I know it's been a little while, but this is a very special episode that's taking about 8 years to make. If you have followed the podcast, my second episode was about a trip I made back in 2015 to visit the home and the personal library of Dr. Gordon Melton. And finally, we were able, after many years, to sit down and record a little interview together this week for release today on Halloween 2023. So, as most people know who follow vampire studies, Dr. Melton is the author of the vampire book, probably the most popular vampire encyclopedia that's been around now for almost 30 years. And we were able to talk a lot about books and about his collection, about Dracula the novel and some of the things he's working on now still, even as he's retired from teaching. So I hope you enjoy this special longer episode with Dr. J. Gordon Melton, author of the Vampire Book and many other books on religion and vampires and many, many other things. I hope you enjoy this interview. And as always, you can follow the podcast at thevampirehistorian.com and on Facebook and Instagram and anywhere you listen to podcasts. Again,
Great to see you.
It's been a few years, I think, since last time. I can't remember if I came to Waco.
Your son came to visit.
Was that the last time? Oh, wow. I can't remember if you stopped through town once. I guess that was before that. Just to kind of get people started, I think most people listening to the podcast know who you are in some ways. But give us a little bit of academic background, kind of. I know the vampires isn't your academic background per se. So can I start with where you started and then how you got to that point?
I grew up in Alabama, went to Birmingham Southern College, where I got my degree in geology, and then went off to seminary. Rather than studying the age of rocks, I was studying the Rock of Ages for a few years. Became a Methodist minister, and then went on to graduate school, got a degree in history and literature of religions, and have been a professor of religious studies, specializing in American religious history. And most of my writing is in that area. I've become best known probably for my writing on what's called new religions. Popular term is cults. And that has been where I've spent most of my time. And then along the way, I got interested in vampires. And, it was a hobby, a side interest, really, until the 1980s. And as the field of vampire studies matured, I kind of graded into it. By that time, I was working with a company called Gale Research in Michigan. Most of us don't know what Gale Research is. You being a librarian, of course, do.
Yes.
But Gale is the largest reference book publishing house in the world. And I worked for it, writing encyclopedias and other reference books. And in 1992... my contract was up. So they called me into Detroit and said, when you come, bring a list of projects you might like to work on apart from the ones we want you to work on.
Sure.
And so I brought them a list, and on that list was an encyclopedia of vampires. I had become concerned that particularly in popular books on vampires, that you could say almost anything you wanted to and get away with it.
Sure.
So I decided, let's do a volume and try to clear up some of this stuff. As you may know, Elizabeth Miller was pursuing the same thing and wrote her fabulous little book called Sense and Nonsense and Dracula. And yes. So I put out the worked on the what we call the vampire book from 92 to 94. And I was very, very fortunate. In 92 was when Coppola's movie came out. Coppola's movie and the success that it showed immediately cemented my contract to do the book. And the book comes out in 94, just at the time that Interview with a Vampire
Right,
was
yes.
happening. And so my book hits the bookstores just as Interview with a Vampire comes to the screen. And it became what for reference books was the bestseller. It was very interesting because Gale published both a hardback and a paperback. Hardback hardly sold enough. Out of 5,000 copies, I think they sold 1,500 of the hardback copies. And I remember the next time I was in Detroit, I asked them about this. And they said where they had miscalculated was that the copies of the vampire book that libraries bought were on a short shelf list. That is, they had a very short shelf life. They were stolen. And so it was cheaper for libraries to buy three paperbacks than to buy one hardback. And that's what they did. And because the copies were, it was like witchcraft books. Again, being a librarian, you would know this.
It took me a while myself to find a hardback copy, but I do have one on the shelf.
I don't know what happened to them. They never hit the used book market. I thought they hit the remainder market and then become available as used books. And you can find them with Amazon and AV Books now. You can find copies every now and then, but for a long, long time you couldn't find a copy. And
Yeah,
I got
it is
some of the
interesting.
last of the copies from Detroit.
It is interesting because that book is probably, can be found in almost any bookstore, especially used bookstores these days. One at least one of the different editions, and so the original book went through four editions, right? Or it's three and a half. I can't remember how you number it.
The original went through three. The fourth edition came out under a different title. It's called The Vampire Almanac. And at one point, the publisher explained to me the publishing rights were sold from Gale to VIP publisher. And the publisher, Roger Janicki, explained to me why we had to change the title of the book. But I get it muddled every time I try to repeat the reason. But the Vampire Almanac is the latest edition of the vampire book, and good chunk of it is all new material because so much had happened since the turn of the century. I decided that that was what I wanted to give coverage to, so we cut out a lot of the older material and put in this new material on the new people who were writing novels. The new scholars who had come to the fore and things like that, new movie, and it was a fun thing. I got to finish up the Twilight and the Buffy entries from the last edition. Things were
Well,
still happening.
now you're going to have to restart the Buffy one with this new Audible program that's just come out, I guess.
The Buffy thing keeps happening. I'm really surprised. Among other things, I have a collection of vampire trading cards, and I have all, would you believe, 23 sets of trading cards, the last of which only came out a year or so ago. And so there's a new audio material, there are new books that are coming out. So and of course the scholarly conference is still happening. We just got the call for papers for the conference for next year. And so every 2 years the scholars keep happening and they keep producing books, new non material. I just got the Buffy tarot card set. It's amazing. And Twilight is going to keep on for a while. I don't know if Twilight's going to turn into Dark Shadows. Would you believe the Dark Shadows convention is still happening?
Oh, wow. No, I
There,
didn't.
there's already the announcement for next year for the next Dark Shadows convention. There are a couple of the stars of Dark Shadows who are still alive.
Wow.
And I went to the last one that Freed was at. Finally got to meet him and get some autographs. But literally he was dead within 3 months of when that happened. But there's a couple of the Dark Shadows people who are still alive, and it still brings in 1,500 people. I'm amazed that and Twilight may turn into that because it re essentially re reached the same audience when it was out as the Dark Shadows did.
Yeah, and she had the new book come out, what, about 2 years ago, the one that she meant to publish a long time ago, and then I think that they got stolen online, so she didn't publish it, and then finally decided to publish it again. So yeah, there will always be some people there and new generations wanting to read it or watch the movies. So
Yeah, and I've been surprised at the what's happened to the price of the first edition. It has shot up over the last
Oh,
5 years, just unbelievably.
wow.
If you've got a pristine copy of the first edition, it was going for close to $1,000.
Oh, wow. No, I wish I did. When I read them, they were actually a gift that my mom bought for somebody else, but she said, read these first before I give it to them. And so I did. And then she sent them on to somebody else, but that's really interesting. So you had the vampire book, which is probably the most successful popular culture vampire book. Like I said, it's you can find it everywhere. You also published along, kind of a companion at the same time of the kind of the Who's Who book, right? The
We did two subsequent books. The Who's Who book was one. Fred Ruffner, who founded Gale Research, gave me a tour of the office the first time I was in there. And one of the places he took me, and he was very proud of, was his Shakespeare office. He had a huge room that was desks like, you'd see in an office of secretaries, just one desk after another full of people. These were all young Shakespeare scholars. He loved Shakespeare. He was producing reprints of Shakespeare for sale to schools and the like. And he had these young scholars at work producing books on Shakespeare. And one of them they produced was a biographical dictionary of all the characters in Shakespeare's plays. And I said, that would be an interesting thing to do, a biographical book of vampires and do all their backstories. And that would have an interesting thing of where fiction writers conceive their vampires coming from. And so I did that. And Simon Bacon, whom you may be familiar with, a young scholar from Poland, or he lives in Poland now. He's not Polish. Has just produced this two-volume book. See, I still have it here. Just got a copy called A Thousand Vampires.
Oh,
And
wow.
it's a two-volume biographical dictionary of, and he's limited himself just to the ones in the movies. You see how many movies there are that you can do a two-volume biographical dictionary. And I told him he needs to pick up and do one on the novels if he can possibly assemble a large enough library to do it. And so we're going to see if that will happen.
Yeah, he's
Then
quite
we did the
active.
movie book after that, which again, now I couldn't do. There are 2,500 vampire films. I know about and missed a bunch.
Yeah, and the original book's been published in several languages too, right? Do you know how many languages it is now?
The ones that I've been able to get Roger to admit to, Portuguese was the first one. It's out in Spanish and it's out in Chinese. I was teaching at a Chinese university, and this is like 10 years ago. And it's the second time I've taught there, and I go back to do my little teaching stint. And the host, person who was hosting my visit, said, would you mind if some of my students come in with their copies of your book and get it autographed? As it's like, which book? I have no idea. And they come walking in with a Chinese copy of the Vampire book. I didn't even know it existed. Fortunately, I was going to the big bookstore in Beijing the next day, and I was able to pick up some copies. But
Yes, I have one of those, I guess. You gave me a Portuguese and a Chinese copy. I don't have the Spanish one. I'll have to look for that.
I'm amazed because Roger didn't tell me about these to begin with, and we didn't make any money off of it because all the money went to the translator, as it should. But in each case, it's someone who was in a country, someone who was in Brazil, someone who's in China, who first informed me that these existed. And I got copies on my own. And so it's just one of those things that happened along the way. We had produced a special edition which was supposed to come out in Poland, but as far as I know, it has never come out. And I have a couple of friends in Warsaw who keep up with vampires, and I'm sure they'd let me know if they
Sure. Yeah, hopefully. So people who have followed my podcast from the beginning, if there are any of those, I'm not sure, would remember that the second episode I ever did was about the first time I visited your house. So, and about kind of the books and and it's been so long now. It's been eight years. It was 2015. And I took that spring break and I visited you and I visited with Michael Bell, both in the same week. And
Right, I remember that, yeah.
so that first time, and so I kind of described in the podcast, what I found. But why don't you kind of just if you could describe to people
Yeah,
what kind of collections you have.
right. If you would come in today, and come into my living room, one wall to the left is nothing but editions of Dracula. I now own around 1,000 copies of Dracula.
That's pretty good.
And
So it was about 800 when I was there the first
yeah,
time. So you've done some work.
I keep up. That's one of the few things I keep up with now, and it goes from some premium editions, very, very expensive premium editions, and right down to the latest drugstore paperbacks and the like. And in front of you would be a glass case, glassed-in case, that houses my collection of vampire novels prior to 1970. That is, those books published before 1970, going back to The Vampire in 1819. And I think that is still the core of the collection. I have that set of copies, maybe 10 copies, that it's the only known copy of that particular book, the first edition of that book that remains. To the right are all the books I've written, and there's a shelf of those that hold the vampire titles, and there are about 10 or 12 that I've done, some of them little pamphlets, but and then each edition of those, several of them have made it into multiple editions, and a couple of books that I've written introductions or chapters for.
Sure.
And then if you go into the den, are all the nonfiction vampire books. And I haven't counted those lately. Actually, I'm waiting on a count back. I have a person that's been working with me to evaluate the collections. Well, you know Margaret and Phil
Yeah,
from
see,
San
I've met
Diego.
him before, yeah.
Yeah, and they have now finished going through all the nonfiction books, and so I'll get a count on that very soon. But I don't know. It seems to me like it's getting close to 1,000 titles, and then upstairs is most of the fiction. Now, when you were here, there were comic books and juveniles. All of those have now gone to San Diego. I'm donating my collection to the San Diego State University. It was, before the comic books left, the largest vampire collection in the world. Have no doubt about that, because I know where the rest of them are. And Massimo Intravigna, who had a larger comic book collection than me, has also decided to donate his collection to San Diego. So my collection, his collection, will be put together. And while there's a large overlap, Massimo has some very important stuff I did not. Most importantly, a lot of the British comics that I didn't have. And he's got some stuff from the continent that I didn't have. Neither of us collected a lot of foreign language comic books, but he had stuff he liked. I had stuff I liked. For example, I had boxes of the Tomb of Dracula in different languages. I had almost a complete run of the Tomb of Dracula in Swedish, for example. And I had some copies from India and some of the Indian languages. Well, anyway, the all the comic books and all the juveniles have flown away. All the drama books, all the plays, copies of Vampire Dracula plays that I had, the humor books, all the vampire joke books and things, those have gone to San Diego now. And we're beginning to send the fiction. Another big chunk of the fiction will go out in the next month or so. It's there, but it still leaves a lot. Right. And so I've I the only oh the all the movies, I all of the DVDs are upstairs, and there are maybe 500 or 600 of those. And then all of the VHS and all of the VCDs are going to San Diego this next month. And so I'm
Do you remember what the final comic count was? Because I remember the first time I came, you thought it was around 10,000, but then when after they were being checked, it was more like 20, wasn't it?
No,
Or was it
it was up above 10,000.
above 10?
I stopped collecting in 09, and again, Massimo and I had a running list. There were about 15,000 from that's between the 1930 and 2009, and we both stopped collecting in 09. And through the whole body of things, we both had stuff the others didn't have, particularly with some of the alternate covers, some of the ash cans, things like that. But then on top of what I had, he had all this British stuff. In the years after the war, after World War II, when the British were trying to recover from the war, there were these weekly magazines that were maybe 40 pages. They were the English version of the Sunday comics from the newspaper. So every page in these w was a comic strip, but a different comic strip. So you get a British comic book, 40 pages, with 35 different comic strips. One of them is a vampire story. And so you'd have this run of 100 of these comic books, and there's a vampire story running through 50 of them, one page. And so you get a 40-page book, you get one page.
Sure.
And I decided I couldn't collect that. That was just too rich, took up too much space for the bang. But Massimo did, and so while I had the sample copy, he had the whole run. And
Right.
so he had 300, 400 more comic books than I did. And but even he ran out of room finally. And so I think he's going to send, the last I've heard is he's sending them to San Diego.
Is there a planned kind of opening date for this collection, or are they just putting it in as they get it, or?
They're putting it in as they get it now. There's a whole lot of politics. They've got this huge L. Ron Hubbard collection, that was because it goes under the science fiction. San Diego State has a huge pop culture collection. They've got a won't stop romance collection and science fiction and fantasy. And then this L. Ron Hubbard collection that's built around his science fiction, but now the same guy who gave it to him is going to give him the Scientology collection, and then my vampire collection. And my vampire collection, as long as I stay alive, it will come in a chunk at a time each year. And I've got it planned out that the fiction will go next. The last things that go will be the nonfiction and the movies. Because I still watch some movies.
Right. Yes.
They bring me joy. And my granddaughter has now turned 21, so she's going to become the executor of my will. And I'm and she kind of understands the collection. And if anything were to happen to me, she would know to just box it up and send it on to San Diego.
Are you're gonna keep the Dracula and the rare editions for a while, though?
Yeah, it'll take another couple of 3 years to get the fiction there, and then it'll be down to the Dracula and the well, actually it'll take, if at current plan, it'll take 5 more years to get with the old fiction. The old fiction, then it's the depending upon how my health and interests are, it'll be, probably be the nonfiction. Then the issues of the copies of Dracula will probably be the last thing that goes. That's a rather unique collection, and so I'm working on it. I just this last week found a new edition of Dracula I didn't even know existed, and I'm waiting for it to arrive now. And it didn't cost that much, but the fact that I didn't know it existed, nobody else did either.
Sure.
And
Well, let's talk a little bit about that part of your work. So,
okay.
what year was, I guess it was right before you came for the 2017 conference. When was this published? I'm looking. It was 2015. So in 2015 you published the bibliography,
Yes,
right?
all things Drake.
The folklore, history, literature, film, and television.
Right. Oh, that one. Yes.
That one. So that's part of your collection isn't just to collect things. You've been compiling these lists now for a long time, and this one's published. Of I guess I'm lucky to be on your mailing list for your unpublished lists, because you got me started collecting these editions of Dracula 8 years ago, and so now you send me your Dracula list update, and I'm nowhere near you. I think I still have about 60 to 65 editions right now, and but when we first met, I only had one, so it's a step in the right direction.
Well, Margaret and Phil, joke with me all the time about being a completist. If you're going to collect Dracula editions for most of us, if you had 100 copies, you could have a beautiful, beautiful collection. I mean, even less than that. For example, I don't know if I sent you the list of the premium
Yeah,
editions.
you just said that one about 2 weeks ago, yeah.
And that, so here are 15 copies of the most beautiful editions of Dracula. Some of them are real works of art. And since I sent you that list, I've found two more, one of which was due out last week. I'm still waiting to see if we're going to get it, but it was a subscription edition, and I got into the subscriptions right at the very end. But it appears from the website to be a beautiful edition, and so they're. Every once in a while, they keep coming out with something like that. And
Yes, yeah, I had a few that are on that newest list, more on the graphic novel side. I had several of those. The premium editions, I don't think I have. Maybe one that I would call kind of, very artistic. But my favorite, I think actually is the really nice Barnes and Noble hardcover.
Oh, that's
You
a
know,
very
that's
nice one.
that's probably my favorite cover of any of the versions that I've got now. But so your bibliography work is always ongoing. So what are you working on now? Can you tell us a little bit about the project you're working on?
I am we're working with Centipede Press and John Edgar and I are going to do a volume of book covers. That is to pull all the artwork together that went into the face of Dracula, so to speak, since the beginning. It's been a really fun project to work on so far. We're going to do the regular editions of Dracula, the abridged editions for people learning English, that is both kids who are growing up learning the language, and then for people who are learning English as a second language, all of the adaptations that have been made for that, and the comic books. And we are going to do the foreign volumes as well. I'm working on Asia right now. Matter of fact, I was this morning working on India, and I've been surprised at how popular Dracula has been in India. I shouldn't be, because I knew there were like three or four movies that Bollywood, they're not Bollywood style, but they're Indian made, made for Indian audiences, readaptations of Dracula. So I think it's going to be fun. Centipede's doing it, which means they can do full color reproductions, and we're going to do a running narrative about how the publishing industry got involved with Dracula and why there are so many editions. Why I can have 1,000 copies of Dracula. It's not that old of a book. And I keep finding things. And then the story of how all of the publishing companies, certainly in the United States and but through most of Europe and even the world now, have collapsed into five conglomerate companies. And Random House Publishers now publishes 50% of all the books in the world. One company publishes 50% of all the books in the world. That's just amazing. And it still seems to be quite a loosely organized conglomerate, so that there's still pockets of differences and things. But all of the companies that seem to have inhabited the Vampire Publishing or the Dracula Publishing world have kind of flowed into Random House. And there's still one or two not a part of that, but Constable, Rider, Doubleday, Modern Library, etc. These are now all owned by Random House. And then picks up with Penguin and Pearson and Longman, which come along a little later. All of the companies that were part of the paperback revolution, they are now all owned by Random House. And so what the other four big companies have as a whole, the only important publisher of Dracula outside of Random House is Macmillan. And Macmillan is part of one of the other conglomerates.
And they do quite a bit of quite a few academic books are published through them, I think, nowadays. So
They are.
it's
It's amazing that there's a couple of companies in England and Scotland, Edinburgh Press and the British Routledge Press, and what is the other one? There's another one that are publishing a tremendous amount of Gothic vampire research. And so most of it's on movies and novels and the Gothic tradition. But those three presses have just really poured out. Between them, they probably put out 10 books a year of top-notch academic work on vampires. And as academic books, you're probably quite aware that that means that they're expensive books. And so keeping up with them, I do try to get myself hired to do reviews for those publishers and take my payment in copies of their vampire literature.
That's the way to do it. Yeah. So when do you kind of hope this project is gonna wrap up? It's a big one, so.
I would like to have it done by the end of summer next year. John Edgar is going to do the early part, which at this point means up to World War II. And I'm going to do the part after World War II, and most pointedly after Dracula enters the public domain. That's one of the four events we found that radically affects the publishing of Dracula.
Yes, and this is just for the listeners, John Edgar Browning, who is quite the specialist in these early information about Dracula. His book on the critical reviews is an important work.
I decided I turned 81 this year. I decided last year after I turned 80 that it was time for me to make plans for the future editions of the Vampire book. So I called up to Detroit and said, the Vampire Almanac will be the last edition I will do. They own the publishing rights and the copyright to the book. So I'm going to find somebody to take it over. And who I found was John Edgar Browning. And I looked around, and of all the scholars working today who are not my age, he is the one who has the broadest vision and can do the most things. So I contacted him and asked him if that would be something he was interested in. He jumped right in and said yes. And so he's visited here, and we have a lot of Zoom calls. And we were working on that when I got this idea for the Dracula book. And so it was only natural to say, well, let's do this together.
Sure.
And as it turns out, our two expertises fit together very well, because he knows that early history. He's written books, a couple of books about the early history of Dracula and Dracula publishing. Did one book about the reviews that Dracula received. And so I'm very pleased to turn that part of the story over to him. And I've been picking up the story. And because I went to China so much, I have a first edition of the Chinese Dracula. I've just discovered the first edition of the Japanese Dracula, and I'm out looking for it now. And so it's been fun. Simone Bernie, who's a bookstore owner, but become quite a good scholar, just published a book a year or two ago about all the first editions in continental Europe.
Oh, wow.
French, German, Spanish, et cetera, and has pictures of them, which is even more fantastic. And then there's all this recent work on the Swedish and Icelandic editions, and the new English edition of the Turkish Dracula. So we're going to be able to cover the whole world with our coverage. And I think it's just going to be a fun book. With all the cover art kind of brought together and juxtaposed in interesting ways, but also so it tells a story of why did Barnes and Noble get into the Dracula publishing business, and why did Penguin get into it, and then how all these companies merging, how that has affected. The company with the longest run of Dracula, apart from Doubleday, has been Signet, New American Library. And all of a sudden in 2015, they've been bought up by Random House, who've assigned New American Library to their major competitor, Penguin. And they decide after 2015, New American Library will only publish nonfiction books. And so here's this book that's been around for 50 years, and it's cut off by a corporate decision. It has nothing to do with it.
Sure.
And and by the way, it turns out that the first edition of the Penguin, the little paperback, Penguin paperback, is one of the rarest of books. If that's the book you want to go looking for. It comes out because of Langella's movie. Penguin starts publishing.
So it's about 79 or 80?
It's a 79 edition. They publish it because of the Langella movie. And on the cover, it says that here's this horror masterpiece, now a movie. And that was a new publisher entering the field, a short-term event. And they kept the cover for subsequent printings, but removed that line. So that is one of the rarest.
What's the cover to that one look like?
It's the one with Dracula's hand coming out of the coffin, black cover, and shows Dracula's hand on the edge of the coffin. Dracula is about to emerge.
Yeah, I don't have that one in paperback for sure, so I'll have to keep an eye out.
Yeah, it's fairly easy to get later printings, but to get the first printing that mentions the Langella movie, there is no copy of that. There's not a picture of that edition on the internet. And so those are the, you know, little tidbits that we're finding out. And we figured out how much the Lugosi movie, the Christopher Lee's Horror of Dracula and Langella and Coppola, those are the, in terms of publishing, those are the things that have pushed the publication.
I do have the movie edition that goes with the Coppola movie, the paperback that came out with that, and I do know I have that one, but my earliest paperback still is 1965, I believe. So I don't have many before that. Actually, as a matter of fact, I think my oldest editions, period, are 65, both of them. But
I think there are one or two earlier. The first real paperback edition that we would think of is actually the wartime edition, the double day one that's printed sideways
with the images, with the comics.
It just has printing on the cover. There's no it was one done for the soldiers during World War II as part of that double day project to get books in the hands of soldiers to entertain them between battles. That's the first modern, and then it's in the early 50s that there are the first paperback editions, a couple of them, and then it's in the 60s where you start getting a lot. The first signet edition comes out in the 60s.
I think the one I've got, it's still, let's see. I believe this is the oldest one I have here. Or you can't see it because it's blurred.
That year, that's one of 64, 65, I think. But that's one of four that come out all within a year of each other.
Yeah, this is 65. And then my other 65 edition is the one that has the sideways comics in it.
Oh.
But it's a paperback size book, but in... it's like one of the first graphic ones, I guess. Graphic novels.
Graphic novels, yeah. Those are important publications now, and they're getting more and more valuable. The one you have has just been republished as a larger volume. Again, sideways with the publication, but. It's telling a fun story. It's interesting, and of course, it's always the treasure hunt that when you get out and are able to find them. It's always nice. I found my first edition Stephen King, got it for $10 at a used bookstore.
I think I have a first edition of Interview with the Vampire. I think that I found fairly.
Yeah,
inexpensively, possibly. So it's those books they pop up every once in a while, and finding them can sometimes be an interesting thing, especially the comics. I don't collect them as much because I don't read comics, but there's a few that I keep in a list on my phone that I'm always looking for, alternate covers and things like that of some of the more interesting ones. And
I searched for 20 years for the first Centipede Press volume. They did a little volume reprinted Nosferatu, and they included in their reprint like 25 pages of stills from the movies, and the PR, they reproduced the press kit. Interesting stuff. I literally searched for 20 years for it, and in the meantime, I had started doing stuff for Centipede. So I went to Jared Walters, who owns it, and I said, "How many copies of the Nosferatu book did you do?" He said, "Only about 100.
Yeah.
And I said, "Oh, that's why I can't find a copy." So help me. I found a copy last year, finally. Wow. And it wasn't that expensive when I found it, a couple hundred bucks, but I was expecting to pay far more. I had passed up two copies along the way that I found that really were audaciously expensive, up in the $1,000 range. And I said, it's not worth it for that. I've got a first edition. But there's these odds and ends that you find that are worth it. I think what's going to be the most valuable item in the collection is an edition that was put out by a little publishing house in Denver called Macabre Publishing.
Mm-hmm.
They did an edition of less than 100 copies. It is a work of art. And it was done to commemorate the opening of the Dracula Ballet in Denver, of all things to commemorate. And but the slip jacket has a beautiful painting. The cover has a painting, and then there are a series of color photographs through the book that were done by a local artist. Just a beautiful, beautiful book. And you can hardly find mention of it on the internet. Nobody knows it exists. And how I got a copy of it, I can't remember now. And it may have been on one of my trips to Denver, and I just saw it, and I was having a good day, so I picked it up. I think I remember paying $100 for it. I'm quite sure today that it would be several thousand, if not more, both because of its rarity and its size. So once people get to know that it exists, and copies will start popping up here and there.
Sure.
Some of the antiquarian book sites.
And, when was that done?
This would have been 20 years ago, shortly after the turn of the century, like 05, somewhere like that. Beautiful, but a beautiful book. And let's see. Maybe 08, because the occasion for my buying that one was that I had missed the printing that Centipede did of Dracula. They did a single big volume of Dracula using the Hildebrand pictures. And I remember writing them about it. It's when I first came into a relationship with them, and they had just sold out. And if I remember correctly, that was 06, 07 when that happened. Mm-hmm. And it was 06, must be 06 when it was printed, and 07 when I wrote them. And I remember every few years I write Jared and say, "There's a copy popped up." Anyway. And so I finally got a copy on the internet. And but then it was after my first disappointment at missing that Dracula that this other one, both of them from Denver. And Centipede is in suburban Denver, and this Macabre was there in Denver proper. But so there are fun things like that go on all the time.
Well, as your collection is starting to be moved away, some of the other collections, I know it's probably been about a year since I asked about the status of Robert's collection, but is that kind of still in limbo right now? Or
Robert's collection is in limbo. I don't think Sylvia knows what to do with it. I guess probably it is about the last time we communicated on this, that I had communicated with Dacre Stoker about it. And it had occurred to me just a week or two ago that I need to get in touch with Dacre again about some other things. Are you familiar with Dacre's publication from Beehive Press that's going to come out in a suitcase? That edition of Dracula,
possibly
with all these documents.
I've seen some of it. I've been following all his new
this is one of those Kickstarter projects that goes on forever. They keep saying the current projection is it'll be out after the first of the year. But it was in connection with that, and I said I need to contact Dacre both about the Beehive project and about if he's heard anything more from Sylvia about Robert's collection.
Yeah. Cause I remember it was almost going to be brought up for auction here in Dallas at one point, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then that kind of fell
Robert
through.
Robert just didn't understand how Heritage works. And he was going to have Heritage House in Dallas do an auction. And then he got all upset and withdrew the collection. He had actually sent a bunch of it to Dallas, and they had to box it up and send it back to him. And he didn't read the fine print in the agreement, you know, the one where if the auction doesn't go as we plan, we can sell it for what we want, kind of a statement. And when he figured that, all that out, is when he withdrew.
Well, that, is there anything in the loss of Robert
is just tragic.
Well, sure. And then Elizabeth, too, not too long afterwards, you know.
Yes. Well, I'll say this. Elizabeth lived a long and full life. And she had the best time of her life the last 10 years. And so when Elizabeth passed, we celebrated. When Robert passed, because of his being taken the way he did, he was, we mourned, because he still had the best things. There were still great things he could have done.
And Gene too. I just realized it's been a lot of people recently. So
yes,
you know, I think you may have, you know, hooked me up with her first, or you were John. I can't remember. And so I saved the envelopes that I used to get from her, because she always covered them in bat stickers and things like that.
Right.
And, I still have a lot of those things, but
and seals,
her newsletter. Yeah,
I still save the envelopes. My journal of Dracula studies from what's the college in Ohio, Kurtztown. They come with a seal, an old 19th century Dracula seal.
Oh wow! But is my question was going to be, is there anything in Robert's collection that if it's ever available that you want to try to get your hands on, or that's
there
important?
Is.
You know,
well, I mean, in Robert's collection, there were these, as he said, these 10 books that he had. It would probably be more like 25 books that he had. He had the only known copy in existence. That was the heart of his collection. He continually had people meeting him saying, I want to buy those books, and offering him large sums of money. And Robert always wanted to sell the whole collection. That was part of it. The one thing that's there that I wanted most particularly were the notes that Bernard Davies gave me. Bernard, you know, was founder of the Dracula Society, which is 50 years old this year. He had spent a lot of his time studying the geography of London relative to the novel. And he had written up all of these notes, basically showing why Leonard Wolf's commentary was wrong. And Robert and I had talked about doing a book together. And I gave him my copy of the notes with the idea we would use them in annotating the Dracula. That book has now come out. Only he and Dacre did it.
No.
Because I was off doing other things. But I would love to get those notes back. And I've talked to Sylvia about that, and and I've talked to Dacre about it. So I hope they will. He's got one or two Draculas I haven't been able to track down. There was an Arrow edition of Dracula that came out with two different covers, in which it's the same design, but the colors are alternated on the two books. And I have one of them, but I don't have the other. Rob has both of them. And just a few things like that, that if it were available, I would love to get my hands on. But
yeah,
I think it's more important that Sylvia finds someone who will take the whole collection, and she can get something out of it to continue her retirement years in. Because that was one of the intentions that Rob had, that he would sell the collection and there would be money for their senior years.
Sure.
So to speak. And
I need to get down and see. I need to come down and visit again to see what you've added since before it's all gone and sent off, you know.
I would love to have you come down and let me do a show and tell.
It's been several years since I've I've been went to Waco once, and I think I couldn't get away from what we were doing to come over. But yeah, we'll come down soon. It's only a 2 hour drive. We just gotta make it happen.
There you go.
Yeah, it's been a while, but well, great. Well, I appreciate you taking time out of your day and in your
It's been
research.
enjoyable. It's not often I have someone to talk with who enjoys the same thing I do.
Yeah, so well, it's it's been a fun time. I had, some of the other didn't get into some of the other stories that I tell people all the time about. The one time that you and I met with Father Sebastian at his hotel, and then he invited us over to his little party. And I remember at the time, I think I told myself, I said, I can't let Gordon go to this vampire party all by himself. I guess I better go with him for a little while. And and we went for about an hour, I remember, or so. And that was
Father Sebastian's still going strong. He
he is, yes.
recovered from the
He's married now too, so
recovered from the damage from the pandemic and
yes.
are
Yeah, he's
holding the
going
balls
strong.
again.
Yeah, all over the place. So
And by the
he's
way, he's
still
put out a fantastic magazine. You can pick it up from Amazon. Each copy is expensive, but it's full color, beautifully done magazine.
Well, I remember that after you and I, met him, he added us to his list of important scholars in his for his clan, so it's and that was one of the more interesting trips that I've made. And and I think you were in town for a romance novel convention to get
That's
some
true.
books signed, and
Yeah,
we all
good.
just it just all just happened to work out where we were all in one place at the same time, so
Yeah.
it's
Yeah, I
fun
keep saying
times.
I've got to go back to the romance writers convention. But they've been in real trouble. That whole outfit went under is, it's a huge organization, and they got caught up in some internal strife that just almost destroyed them, and they're just recovering from that.
Yeah. Well, hopefully they'll get going. Not that's one part of the literature I have not gotten into. So but that's okay.
Yeah.
You got to keep your collections going. Great. Well, I hope everything works out with getting your books evaluated. I'll be very interested to hear the number, not just the number of books, but the evaluation number when it's all complete. Just which I know it's a donation, so but it'd be interesting to see how much you've accumulated over the years. And it's an ongoing project, because I remember Galileo, last time you were here when we had the conference, that was 6 years ago, and they were working on it then. So
Yeah, that's when they really begun the work, and but it's a big enough project and it's a valuable enough project as it turns out. I don't think any of us understood how valuable it was going to be, and the value of for example the collection on Dracula has just soared since the pandemic, and not because of the pandemic, because of other things, but I now rejoice when we get new movies out of Hollywood because it brings more people into the vampire community and raises the value
Sure.
of the collection.
It's funny. I didn't see your you didn't participate this past weekend in the Congress this year, did you? I don't think the Children of the Night Dracula Congress.
No, no.
No, not this time. Yeah, you did last year, but
No, I
I
was off at one of my major conferences is the Society for Scientific Study of Religion, and it was conflicting with that, and I had two papers to deliver at the SSSR, so I didn't do the children tonight.
I did one I did a presentation Friday on Christian thematic material in vampire cinema, kind of, but the title was Wait, Dracula Is Really Judas. Kind of, based on the Dracula 2000, and then went from there to John Carpenter's vampires, and Bram Stoker's Dracula, all those, you know, just touch on and kind of ended with Midnight Mass, the Netflix series, you know, and you know, so it was just one of my little quick ones that it seemed to be a pretty good conference. So lots of people were, I think they had about 20, 25 people in person in Romania, and then they still did the rest of it virtually. And, you know, Florin brought up the fact that I was the first virtual presenter ever in 2018. I was the first person they ever let present remotely. And now it's most of the people are presenting remotely. Yeah. So I told him I'm a trendsetter. So.
Well, the way the airplane tickets have skyrocketed, it's just hard to do intercontinental stuff anymore.
Yeah.
And I've got two conferences lined up for Europe next year and a third on the way. And so I may be traveling because all of them come with flight tickets. And I'm going to Taiwan at the end of the year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, good. So, very, very good. Excellent. Well, thanks again for taking your time out, and we look forward to the books. I'll put some links to the books that you've published, and people can find, which I'm sure most people listening, they'll probably already have at least one copy of the vampire book in their collections, because
maybe their tribe increase.
That's right. And maybe one. See, I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 copies of the vampire book on my shelf, all different, 7 different versions.
There you go.
you know, it's definitely a important work, and all of your work is important that you've done so and continue to do. So hopefully we'll see the new book, and, you know, thanks for all the resources that you're always sending along and providing to everybody. So
thank you. It's been fun.